Edna St. Vincent Millay once wrote, "My candle burns at both ends." Called the girl poet, Millay enjoyed a robust love life at Vassar. She was a star of Greenwich Village, Bohemia, and served as Vanity Fair's first foreign correspondent to Paris, later to Albania. Millay's life and poetry are the subject of a new biography, Savage Beauty, by Nancy Milford. During the 30 years it took her to write the book, Milford gained the trust of Millay's sister and access to the poet's diaries and notebooks. Milford says Millay's girlhood in Maine was spent in poverty, but was made magical by her fierce single mother, Cora.
They had no regular couches and chairs, but they had a hammock strung up in the front room of this little house, and they had opera scores that they sang from. It was a life which was not desolate. It was full of responsibility and true joy, I think.
What gave her a national audience?
It was a poem she wrote between the ages of 19 and 20 called Renaissance. She had titled the poem Renaissance, and an English publisher suggested to her that it should be Renaissance, and she quickly changed it. This poem is lovely still, and it's about being buried alive, not in a small provincial Maine village, but spiritually, psychically, every way. And then it's about rebirth. You come back, the rain washes the earth away.
This poem was part of a contest.
Yeah, well, she didn't win the contest, but when the book was reviewed, everybody pointed to Renaissance. It's wonderful. And it begins, "All I could see from where I stood were four long mountains and a wood. I looked another way and saw three islands in a bay. These were the things that bounded me over these things I could not see." And it's Muguntikook, Mount Betty in Camden, Maine, looking out toward Penobscot Bay.
And then comes her Cinderella moment. She gets a patron.
Well, she gets a patroness. Her name was Caroline Dow, and heard her read her poem at a summer hotel, and just adored her and her work, and got together the funds to send her to Vassar.
She had an interesting time at Vassar. Many conquests among the student body.
And not only the student body, but I think also the professorial bodies were involved. I suspect she was both intellectually fascinating and physically fascinating, I think.
Reading about her, one is very attracted to her. And yet I wonder, if I was her contemporary, would I like her, given the way she treated people?
Oh, sure you'd like her. I mean, come on.
Well, she was mean.
Well, I think most good women do have a mean streak, sir. I think the childhood, which I try to explore, her responsibility from the age of 10 or 8, I mean, it does give you an edge that you never lose.
The 20s, she just about owned the 20s, if Scott Fitzgerald didn't. She was like a rock star. People crowded to see her in her readings, and she delivered like a rock star. It wasn't just a recital. She performed.
Who is a figure, you know, that's comparable in poetry or American writing today to that kind of vivacity and performance?
Love is not all. It is not meat, nor drink, nor slumber, nor a roof against the rain, nor yet a floating spar to men that sink and rise. And sink and rise and sink again. Love cannot fill the thickened lung with breath, nor clean the blood, nor set the fractured bone. Yet many a man is making friends with death, even as I speak, for lack of love alone.
Yeah, she was a performance artist. That's what we call it today.
Yeah, I bet you're right. Mm-hmm.
1923, she won the Pulitzer in May, the first woman to win the Pulitzer in poetry, got married in July, had an appendectomy the next day. Things like this just happened to her, it seems.
Yeah, well, that appendectomy was actually not an appendectomy. It was said that in the paper to give an excuse for it, but she had some kind of horrible intestinal muckle-muck, you know, and they tried to straighten it out and did sort of, but she was a person who, after the Pulitzer, her life... It's just after she comes back from Paris, her life just soars. It just takes off. And Eugen, her husband, was part of the reason for that. I think he loved her, and he was able to financially pay for some of the difficulties in her life at that time, which were about health.
1927, she wrote a libretto for an opera that the Met performed. I think it was the biggest thing they ever did, wasn't it?
This was on the front page of every newspaper in America, not just in New York. And some of the songs are lovely. The Song of the Harper is just extraordinary. She uses Anglo-Saxon beats and sounds sweet and strong.
So here she's a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet. She writes and directs a very successful play that's widely performed. Now the libretto for an opera. Later she translated Baudelaire.
Yes.
Like there was nothing in the field of writing she couldn't do.
She was a gifted person. And, you know, if you let it out, I think you can go in many different directions.
In the late 30s, she got very political. She was kind of a truth squad for, you know, acting against people who were defending Hitler or wanting to appease
her. She was called a premature anti-fascist. Can you believe that? I mean, gee whiz. But during World War II, at the very beginning, maybe because she'd spent time in Europe, but she saw what was going on, and she wrote passionately about it.
I don't know how she could write about anything. She was getting addicted to morphine.
When I found those drug notebooks, I'll never forget. Her sister was living then, and that was the person that sort of gave me access. She was saying that she thought they were gin rummy scores. It was under Vince and Eugen. And there were these lines of times and, as it turned out, dosages. And I had, in my youth, had played a certain amount of gin rummy, and I knew they were gin rummy scores. And they were the dosages of morphine that Eugen was giving her or she was giving herself, and eventually that he joined her in the addiction. But I remember taking those drug notebooks to an eminent doctor. And she looked at the drug notebooks, and she just stopped. She said she was an addict. And she said she was taking 10 times what an addict on the street would take today.
She pulled out of this addiction, and about then her husband died.
You know, I'm not sure that one can ever anticipate the way lives end. When you think of this woman pitching down a flight of stairs, in a way, her manner of death and her addiction were the two most disturbing to me personally.
She was only 58. I'm wondering if you think she might have had a second act.
Well, 58 now begins to sound quite young and sprightly to me.
Certainly to me.
But I began this book, you know, in my 30s, and I thought, 58's a good long life. I mean, I don't know. Some of the poetry that she left was just magnificent. You know, it's hard to say. I'm not very good about being a soothsayer.
Nancy Milford, author of the new biography, Savage Beauty, The Life of Edna St. Vincent Millay.